It's the Bill Murphy Show. The daily music interview show featuring some of the best in the business. From behind the scenes, in the studio, and on the stage. Brought to you by Lulu's Bait Shack. Fresh Florida seafood, gigantic fishbowl drinks, and live music at Lulu's and Beach Place on A1A in the heart of Fort Lauderdale Beach. And here is your new digital broadcast for Wednesday, June 15th, 2011, as we go 100% music all the time here on the show. Big changes coming up in the near future. Still in transition, so stay tuned for updates on future guests and the way we are formatting the show. If you want to become a part of the show as a partner, sponsor, advertiser, get in touch with me at Murph at BillMurphyShow.com. That's M-U-R-P-H at BillMurphyShow.com, and we'll make you a part of the team. Big, big names for the music industry coming up in the very near future. It's going to be a fun summer. We got a lot of tours that we're going to be keeping an eye on and talking to the members of. So, real exciting stuff in the future, and a very exciting show on tap for today. It's guitars. You nerdy guitar techie type guys, you players, you guys that work with guitars, that build guitars, you'll appreciate my guest today. It's Jeffrey D'Amico, otherwise known as Jeffrey D or Jeffrey Guitar. This has become, are you in the process of changing your name and officially becoming, putting guitar as part of your name here sometime soon?
It'll be Jeffrey D Guitars.
All right, you're going to need to get right up on that mic somehow. So I don't know if you're a guitar, we've got a guitar in hand and everything. So we got to set you up so that you're right on this mic.
Cool. Jeffrey D. Guitars.
Jeffrey D. Guitars. Okay, so you could legally change your name and make it Guitars, but Jeffrey D'Amico is the official name. All right, now where did the Jeffrey D., you started to tell me the story before, but I cut you off and said save it for the show. Let's hear the story behind how you got the name, who gave it to you first, And how did it stick?
Well, yeah, a few years back, we were at a gig, doing a gig with Tommy Sal.
Okay.
Open mic before really was a lot of open mics. So Tommy introduced me, and
how many years ago are we talking about?
5-6 years ago.
Okay.
Maybe. And well, it had to be longer. That'd be longer, maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Okay.
But Tommy puts me on stage. I'm nervous. I'm getting up in front of everybody, and he says, I'm going to introduce you to Jeffrey D. And he says, Jeffrey D., what's your stage name? Quick. And I says, well,
I guess it's Jeffrey,
I guess it's Jeffrey D. So it's stuck ever since.
And on Facebook, you're Jeffrey Guitars.
D'Amico. Jeffrey D. Guitars.
Jeffrey D. Guitars. All right. It can get a little confusing, but yeah. All right, and we urge all guitar players and everyone, if you don't already know Jeff from the South Florida area, you can friend him on Facebook. We're going to have the links for you to do that right here on the show. And also the link to what you're doing. Now, these days you're selling guitars, but I want to get into that, the whole gbass.com story and all that. But let's start from the beginning, as I always love to hear everybody's story about how they got started. At what young age did you first pick up a guitar and feel, you know, attached to it? Because sometimes, you know, some guys just pick them up and don't feel comfortable, but some guys just feel right at home the first time they pick up a guitar. Was that the case with you?
Oh, we wanted to, but I think it's going to be about 8 or 9 years old with a Sears Roebuck type
silver
acoustic.
Tone. Is that what it was?
Oh, no. I wish it was a silver tone. I don't remember, but wish we had it today. It'd be worth something.
You know, there's so many stories about it. I wish we had that today. It's so sad when I think about the guitar that my dad handed down to me as a teenager that I ended up, you know, talking him into trading in for a Les Paul copy. And it was a big Gretsch Green Monster, it was the nickname of it, but one of those like 1961 Gretsches. And a Fender Deluxe amp. If I had those two pieces right now, I'd be the happiest guy in the world. But they're nowhere to be found. They got traded in at Musicians Exchange years ago.
So. Everything's for sale.
Right, exactly. But I didn't know any better at the time. But go on. So you had this first guitar,
The first guitar was had. I think the songs we started to learn were like Creedence Clearwater Revival, Have You Ever Seen Rain?
Okay.
And started to get into it, and was making some progress, way back when there was no internet, there wasn't anything but, you know, sheet music or anybody to teach you like
now. You're talking to me as if I don't remember those days.
Maybe I'm not sure.
I'm right up there with you, brother. I remember.
Just sheet music. I mean, we get sheet music was, you know, $3.25 a sheet.
Right.
And we'd have to learn from there. My whole family were musicians. My father was in a drum and bugle corps. My stepmother was a guitar player, singer. You know, my two brothers were guitar players, and you know, and
older brothers,
younger brothers.
Okay.
And one of my older brothers was a guitar player, and my other brother played the trumpet. So everybody played some type of instrument.
Yeah.
And you know, I stuck with the guitar. You know, as I got in my later teens or early teens, I wanted to play more, but we couldn't learn fast enough.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe it's the technology today.
Well, I was never able to learn, and again, I don't want to make this about me at all. But I love guitars. I'm a huge fan of them. I have a few nice guitars, but I've always just been a very mediocre player. Once it gets into really moving your fingers around and playing, you know, leads and stuff, it's like playing the drums. I'm just as uncoordinated on the guitar if it gets complicated as I am with anything else. It's just there's a threshold that you have to cross that just separates the talented guys from the not talented guys.
There's a lot of great musicians, singers, songwriters that they're mediocre players.
Right.
But they can write and they can sing. And
they got the feel.
And they have the feel, and they put the best players behind them.
Right. And so this progressed into where you, as a teenager, did you have the typical garage band?
The typical garage band, and we never went anywhere, but we did play.
Right.
And I actually ended up working for bands.
Okay.
So going behind the scenes, doing lights and roadie and spotlights and lugging equipment, and that's where I mainly got my start in music.
Okay.
And I actually had to get a real job after that, but.
But all those are real jobs. Right? Yeah. I mean, if you get into the technical part now, how much of it was, because I know a lot of guys are just self-taught and it's kind of just getting a natural feel of it. I know at a very young age, I was turning bass and mid-range and treble knobs on every stereo that I was around. I got a good feel of how to make things sound good. And that sort of developed into, all right, now I can put those, that fine-tuned ear to use in like a mixing studio and stuff. But was there any formal training at all? Were you schooled at all? Were you taught by any of the greats out there? Or was it mainly a self-taught kind of thing?
It's all self-taught.
Yeah.
And back then, I think the majority of the people were all self-taught.
Yeah.
Somebody would show you a chord and somebody would show you an E or an A and you would learn from there.
Right.
And you would say, show me that lead or show me that lick you just did.
Right.
And you would try to figure it out, and without any real formal training that you can get, you just if you weren't the most extremely talented person, you were just going to be mediocre.
Yeah. I mean, it really took a lot of work to get to it. But I mean, I do see some guys that just some of it comes naturally to them, and they're just like can watch a guy play a part and then pick up a guitar and play the part.
How do they do that?
A phenomenon to me, and it makes me wonder about that whole, hereditary thing. Is it something you're born with, or is it something that's all just, you know, learned and a product of your environment? So
I think there's people with true talent.
Yeah.
They just, you know, I saw a couple of guys last night. They're just truly talented musicians, piano players, singers, songwriters.
Right. We should talk about that, by the way. Down here in Fort Lauderdale, for those of you who are out of the area, there's a monthly happening at the Broward Center for the Performing Arts that's Crystal Hartigan's original songwriter showcase, and it is really a special thing that happens that we actually have a venue to do that. I guess it's awesome that the folks at the Broward Center, you know, allow her to put that on, and there's some really talented cats. I didn't get to make it down there because I was too much into the Stanley Cup Finals last night. But who was part of that show last night? Who did you get to see?
Well, Fernando Perdomo.
Oh, the great Fernando Perdomo.
Vic Kingsley.
New dad, by the way. Let's congratulate
Fernando. Yes, congratulations, Fernando. Vic Kingsley and Danny Luis.
Okay.
Three very talented musicians, singer-songwriters. I was very excited to be there.
And is there, in your mind, is there a South Florida scene? Is there a sound that kind of defines our scene down here? Are we, have we gotten to that point? I know we're on the way, but how progressed is that?
I think yes, because, you know, I think the music scene in South Florida is alive and well.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people will come back and say, you know, nothing's really happening here, but a lot is happening when you see the open mics and the jams and the singer-songwriters from, you know, South Miami way up into, you know, West Palm Beach.
Yeah.
And you notice that on Facebook because your friends are, musician friends are from West Palm Beach, and now it's spread to Clearwater, Tampa,
right.
Orlando.
Exactly.
And there is a big, very big, for myself, a very big customer base and all musicians.
Right. And can you describe the sort of sound? It's probably not as, for those of you listening from out of the area, probably not as Latin as you might think it is, the music scene down here. I mean, I'm talking about the pop mainstream sort of sound that comes out of this area. Is there a way to describe it? What the, you know, the primary sound of the music down here is?
Well, I think like the music we saw last night is very, let's say like Fernando, it's like John Lennon and John Rundgren, and you can name 10 people all wrapped up in the one, the way he writes songs.
Right. I think the term retro is overused, but it is apt when you describe Fernando's music.
Absolutely. And Vic and Danny, they have their own sound, and their songs they're so good.
Right.
And I would say that the music would be mainstream music, not necessarily pop,
right?
But good rock and roll. There's very good ballads.
Mm-hmm.
There's love songs. There's a little bit of everything. As far as Latin into that, no, not really. Like you would say that in the area of the '80s, where Gloria Estefan was, mm-hmm. Much more of that Latin beat type music. That music's still here.
Oh, I know, and I mean no disrespect at all. I mean,
no,
I'm sure
not at all.
You know, there's any number of venues that you could go in the Miami area that have a thriving Latin original music scene. That we're just not aware of, or we don't see as much as other people. But you know, I guess that, and I've had this discussion with several guests on my show over the year that we've been on about how everything is becoming, I think, a lot less geographical. Back in the days when we weren't all connected by the internet and radio stations weren't basically syndicating the same formats on every station across the country, you had your Nashville sound, you had your Texas sound, you had your northeastern sort of Massachusetts thing. The Seattle scene was a perfect example of that too, where depending on where you go in the country, you would hear a different sound. I think everything is sort of, you know, a little more universal now. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that because, like, you'll go to a venue and you'll see, well, my band does all originals.
Right.
And they're rock and roll.
Yeah.
And then you go to another venue and says, I'm doing all covers, which is perfectly fine because you get every, you know, right now they're all playing the 80s and the 70s rock and everything we all know.
Uh-huh.
And then you get the next crowd that will do the Latin music, you know, types and so on and so forth. But I think that the music scene in South Florida is very big, and there's such a wide range of musicians and talent here. It's pretty amazing.
I guess in that respect, it sort of does reflect how much of how culturally mixed we are down here. It always has been like that. There's everybody that's here is basically transplanted from another area. So that therein, you know, lies a variety within our scene. But I think the whole country is a little bit more connected and everything's a little less geographic than it used to be. Now, you said to me earlier, again, before we actually started taping, that you consider yourself to be more or less over the years in your career, you've been more of a salesman than anything, but I guess salesman before musician, and you kind of combined the two over the years, right?
I have combined the two. I've been in sales since day one.
Yeah.
Early 20s.
What kind of stuff were you selling?
Well, my family had businesses, and we always did sell. My father was a salesman, and so we were trained that way. So any job I could possibly get had to do with sales, whether or not it was selling the products that we sold back then, or I sold cars.
Yeah.
or I was a mortgage broker. I worked for J.P. Morgan Chase. I worked for my friend's mortgage company. And again, it's all sales.
Something I cannot relate to at all. There was just, I was not born with a sales gene, so I can't relate to that. I respect everyone that does it, but it's just something that I haven't found to be very skilled in. And that sort of evolved into selling music equipment and in particular guitars. I know a lot of our friends that we have in common know you from being your many years that you spent at Music Arts Enterprises here in Fort Lauderdale. And the great Ken and Mike Katz, the store that's been there for, got to be more than 30 years now that they've been there.
44 years.
Whoa, 44 years. Okay, well, I won't say how many of those 44 years I've been going there because that sort of gives it away. But it is quite an outfit they've got there and a great wall of guitars when you walk in. And you had some great experiences there. And I'm guessing that it really, really picked up your knowledge of guitars and how that whole business works.
Oh, absolutely. From just playing the guitar and, you know, playing some Jimmy Buffett at private parties to really going to a full-fledged multi-million dollar guitar business.
Yeah.
And, you know, learning from dealing with the manufacturers to seeing what type of instrument it was, to going from a 6-string to a 12-string to a bass to a 5-string bass to amplifiers. And my position there took on pretty much everything.
Right.
You know, buyer, seller, you know.
Consultant.
Keeper, sweeper, yeah. Consultant.
Repair guy.
Repairs, whatever I had to do, that's what we do. When you know, and as a salesman, you do that for your customers.
Okay. Now, you've got a nice Taylor acoustic here that you've got plugged in, ready to go. Let's hear how beautiful this thing sounds.
This is a Taylor 814 CE.
Okay.
It's one of their flagship guitars for Taylor.
And just so anybody that the guitar players that are listening that are wondering, it is being picked up on the mic that you have there, but it's also running through some virtual software, and we tried to get as clean a sound as we could. But boy, it sounds beautiful. I've always found Taylors difficult to play. Are they, compared to other acoustic guitars, do you find them a little more difficult?
No, what the difference is in the Taylor, the neck is a little wider than the standard Martin. Neck width. So what happens is you'll see back here, it's just a little bit wider at the nut, so it makes it feel, and it's only so minute.
Uh-huh.
I mean, but when you feel it, it's a very wide neck. I didn't play this guitar for 2 years after I bought it.
Oh, wow.
I did buy it from...
Why is that?
I didn't like the neck.
Okay. Now, see, that's where you know where I'm coming from then.
And I bought this guitar in 2002 and didn't play it for 2 years.
But just to be clear, I find every guitar difficult to play because I'm not that great a player. But I found the Taylors to be just a little more, you know, a higher learning curve as far as getting them to sound clean. And
Not really. It just depends. But you say this is a little bit wider here, but the action is lower.
Oh, okay.
And then... effortlessly, all I did was turn the volume on. I really didn't set anything in.
And it's basically a flat setting there. Very nice. So that's a flat setting on the guitar for the most part. And then let's see what we've got going on in this virtual setup here, just so the guitar players that are listening that might be curious would know. Basically flat, just a little past center on the mid-range and just a little bit past the center on the treble. Presence is at about 10 o'clock or so.
And the guitar is the same thing. It's 50% everywhere,
right.
50 and volume, 50 treble bass.
And drive is all the way down. So go ahead and play that thing just like full out for a couple of seconds. Very nice. Very, very nice. Now, here's a question that I have, and I'm always curious to bring this up with all guitar players when I have this discussion. Let's talk about tone. And then some people are very, very picky about tone, and what I'm going to ask you probably pertains more to electric than it does with acoustic, but you'll correct me if I'm wrong. When people talk about tone and what a guitar sounds like or what a rig sounds like or what all their processing with their rig sounds like, aren't we really talking about a sound that 85% of it is really the player and the fingers and the way they play and their style? How much of the tone is gear and the instrument, and how much of the tone is the guitar? I guess To make an analogy, if Eric Clapton picked up my guitar and played it, it would still sound like Eric Clapton, correct?
Absolutely.
I mean, and if I picked up Eric Clapton's guitar and played through his gear, it's not going to sound like him. It's going to sound like me playing a crappy guitar.
You'll still hear that tone. You'll still hear that, you know, very good sound. But I can take a Squire Strat and hand it to a local musician like David Shelley.
Right.
And he will make that sound.
Like David Shelley.
That sound, it will be good.
Right.
Now, but when you start to get to studio quality, good sound, even though it'll sound good because he's a great player, like we just did here, we made everything flat, and that sounds okay. But when we start to record, we can make that sound 1,000% better.
Agreed. Obviously, we can enhance it any way we like once. But the starting point, the original sound, I mean, it's David Gilmour's fingers are what makes the guitar sound like it's singing. It's not necessarily the gear or the guitar he's playing. Would you agree with that?
I agree.
Okay.
I mean, it's gonna be a great player, but you can give a pretty crappy guitar to a great player, and he will make it sound good.
Right. He might not necessarily enjoy it that much.
No, but... and you won't have the studio quality that we strive for, and that's the tone we're looking for.
Right.
Because, like I said, with this guitar, all I did was strum it, and by all means, I'm not a great player, but that is good sound, and that's good tone.
I can't believe we've burned 20 minutes already doing this, and we haven't really got into what you're doing these days. Now, you've moved on from your days at Music Arts Enterprises, MAE. Let's give them a quick plug down there on Davie Boulevard in Fort Lauderdale. Go see Mike and Ken and tell them Bill Murphy sent you and Jeffrey D, and they will take care of you in any musical instrument needs that you need, that you may have. But you're involved now kind of independently selling guitars, hooking the players up with the right guitars and specifically what they need. Tell us a little bit about that and how people can find out about getting one of your products.
Yeah, actually what I do is I do it worldwide, and I do I bring the guitar and the player together.
Right.
From vintage guitars to fairly new guitars to new guitars. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the player. For instance, we were just referring to the Tom Anderson line, which is a custom shop builder from California, builds one of the finest electric guitars that is made on the planet.
Well, let's make a quick switch here. Let's get that electric plugged in here. And this is all right off the cuff here. But I'm going to go ahead while you plug in that guitar. I've got you muted here now. But while you do that, I'll set up a nice electric guitar sound. And we'll hear this Tom Anderson rig. It's a Telecaster body.
Strat.
Oh, Strat, I'm sorry. What am I thinking? But a very unusual looking back pickup. What is going on there before you start playing?
It's his humbucker single configuration. It's a humbucker pickup, and you just don't see the normal screws that are on top of.
Right. It's a flat, okay.
It's just a flat chrome.
Oh, I see. It's just all that's missing is the screws.
Exactly.
I gotcha. Okay.
And then the other two are single. It's a standard tremolo type bridge, vintage style. The body is of alder. The neck is a hard rock maple, one piece.
Okay. And we'll have a picture of that on the page so people can see what it is that you're playing here. Beautiful finish on this thing. Candy apple red how you would describe that color? You think?
I think it's a translucent red, but that's candy apple red all day long with the white leather interior because it's a white perloid pickguard, and it's truly a beautiful piece.
Looks just as good on a guitar as it does on a car. So let's hear that bad boy a little bit here.
Sound of guitar.
Yeah.
Very easy to play. Now, what I said about Tom Anderson's guitars, they are the finest pieces, really, I believe, that are made in the world. He doesn't make a lot of guitars. To get one, normally you have to order it, and it's 3 to 4 months to get one.
Wow. And how much construction does he do? In other words, okay, just so I'm curious, would he get that neck and the body and put it together, or would he put that body actually together himself?
I mean, no, I think they do everything themselves.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
And anything else unusual about that in electronics or anything in that thing? What's the tiny little switch that's on the faceplate there?
It gives you different sounds.
Okay.
Now, for instance, we have a five-way switch.
We have the regular five-way switch that we're all used to.
And we got a little VA booster, they call this thing here. And okay, what happens is, gives it just that little extra oomph.
Okay.
And you also have a push-pull, which when you're in the bridge position or the neck position, you can push-pull and it adds the bridge. So what you get is actually two pickups.
Okay.
So your five-way switch turns into much more. But basically, I like keeping that second position Strat style sound.
Right, right.
You know?
Unmistakably Strat. I mean, we have a little more distortion than usual on this, but it's still that basic sound is there.
And one thing you'll notice about this guitar, you take all the distortion off, and it's perfectly clean.
Well, let's go back to what we had here. Hold on, it's going to take me a second here. Oh, let me just mute this so now everybody doesn't have to hear me scrolling through these sounds. But let's put a nice clean sound on here, and let's see what this baby sounds like. Okay, there you go.
That's an electric guitar.
Yes. Very pretty. Now, by the time people are listening to this show, you're hearing it, a 128K MP3, presentation of the show. So we have a little scaled down sound of the fidelity, but we've got it in stereo and everything, so you can get an idea at least of what this sounds like. It's odd, this MP3 world we live in today. It's a little disheartening that everything is a little scaled down in sound wise, and we've kind of lowered our standards as far as sound goes, you know. But I think we got a good idea of what that bad boy sounds like. So, is a Tom Anderson Guitar Works Strat more expensive or less expensive than a regular Strat?
Very more expensive.
Very much more because of how much detail.
The detail that goes into it, and once you like this guitar, you pull it out of the case, you do nothing to it.
Right.
It's set up.
I see. It's done.
So they do spend many, many hours on the guitar, setting it up and bringing it to you. And once you have it, most of the people who actually have guitars like this are, you know, Nashville players and studio players. Or if you see, like, even on, like, American Idol, you saw some of the guys playing the more expensive PRSs and that type
right.
guitars, the 3,000 and up guitars, which these are.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. So very, very high-end stuff going on there.
And this is the kind of stuff that I bring to people, because most of the people that I would deal with are studio musicians or, you know, very professional. And this is what they're looking for. They're looking for this tone.
Now, that's the type of guitar that someone's getting very meticulous about a sound in a studio. You're much better off with a guitar like that, you know, than a basic off-the-shelf, you know, run-of-the-mill guitar store guitar.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, we'll have none of that right now. So that's fascinating stuff. Then so people can get a closer look at your inventory and what you have by going to gbase.com. Talk a little bit about that outfit. What is how does gbase.com work?
Well, gbase is
and we're talking about gbase. We have the link on the show. So
yeah, gbase.com is where I have my guitars. Gbase.com is a website where dealers go to and they bring their inventory there.
Okay,
so it's a server. So they hold your inventory and pictures and your name and your phone numbers. This is like having your own website.
Sure.
But what they did was bring hundreds and maybe thousands of dealers in the U.S. and around the world together.
I see.
On one website.
And now, can someone go specifically to your inventory?
They can go to mine. You just look up. It depends on the area you're in. You can punch in find a dealer. Put Fort Lauderdale zip code 33312.
Got it.
And you'll see the dealers. And this dealer, in this area, there's about four or five dealers that are on GBase. And then you'll see Jeffrey D's and MAE and Guitar Broker and...
Also, what's great about that is that no matter where you are, you can find someone local and save a ton of money in shipping. And
absolutely.
Nobody really wants to have a guitar that's that, you know, delicate and that intricate shipped anyway, because you'd just be worried about it the whole time it was on the way, wouldn't you?
And we deliver.
Yeah, right. deliver. Exactly.
Locally,
so.
We do. Yeah, well, these true, and it's perfectly safe to ship them.
Oh, it is? Okay.
You know, as we spoke, this will be shipped out shortly.
Oh, it will be? Okay.
Yes. But,
So anybody from anywhere can get something out of your inventory and still have it shipped?
Oh, absolutely. I basically sell and been selling all over the world for the last few years.
Okay.
And it really comes out of nowhere. I would expect that. I would like to have all the business right here in Fort Lauderdale.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I can run the guitar over to you if I have to. But guess what? They're calling from Chicago, California, Texas. This is going to Texas tomorrow. The other one went to California. The other Tom Anderson went to California. And Tom Anderson builds in California.
Oh, okay.
So they find the piece. It's not easy to find a beautiful, you know, quilted maple top in translucent black that's in perfect shape.
Right, right, right.
And they're not all there. That's why this is a custom shop builder. Whoever has a guitar, you're lucky enough at that point to sell it. And the same thing with tailors. You know, there's 1,000 tailor deals in the U.S. How come they come to me? Well, a lot of people know me. In my past experience, I've met many, many Grammy Award winners, many musicians, many doctors, lawyers, and just normal people who live here in South Florida. And, you know, all of a sudden they say, you know, I want that 814 CE. Where do I get one?
Right.
Well, not everybody always has one in stock.
Yeah, yeah. And here's another thing I'm curious about that just occurred to me. First of all, so where do you keep all your stuff? I know that you don't want to keep that a secret, but is this something that you have a lot of inventory in your own home? And I also want you to talk about what's the best way, the things to look for and what to do and what not to do when you're storing a guitar or keeping a guitar. Obviously, you want to avoid humidity and stuff, but what special care steps should people take as far as making sure a guitar stays preserved and in great shape over the years?
Well, I'll answer the first question there about where we keep them. Right now I have a warehouse that is not a storefront at this point.
Okay.
It will be during the course of the year sometime, and we're working on that right now.
You're going to have your own place where people can go in and see it
in
person.
Yeah, and mainly my idea of the place is a very basic, simple setup with a nice studio area where people can come try boutique guitars and amps or used pieces, whichever we have available, vintage pieces like a 63 Stoptail ES-335 that you can't find anywhere.
Right, wow.
Or a 66 or, you know, even Tom Anderson, which is a very, very hard guitar, Sir guitars, Martin guitars that are high-end pieces. We're an aspect most people can go. If you want to buy a $300 or $400 or $500 guitar, you can find them anywhere.
Sure.
But there's certain pieces that you can't find that you have to come to somebody like me, which I'll probably have both.
Right.
So we'll have that set up, and we'll let everybody know where and when. But for now, basically, you know, I have the pieces stored, and they're for sale on the website, and you can see them. And we bring them to you.
Now, hypothetically speaking, if I wanted to cure this heartbreak I have of losing that old Gretsch 61, you could make it happen that we could actually find one of those somewhere.
We find one, and especially on G-Bass, because you can put it in
a specific model,
and I'm not afraid of competition, so go right ahead.
Right.
Put the specific model and find out where the dealer is,
yeah,
because they do the same for me. Mm-hmm. You know, they go in there and they put it up. If that 63 Stoptail comes up, you know, there's only four of them on G-Bass in the U.S.
Right.
So
there's a good chance they'll find one through
you.
And
I have the nicest one. So.
Okay. Let it be known that he has the nicest one. But again, about the storage thing and how to keep your guitar in good shape over the years, some do's and don'ts.
Well, here's the main thing. The South Florida humidity today was about 70%.
Unbelievable.
So it was over 100 degrees, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But Let's say I was very much afraid to keep the guitars in the car today, even my laptop in the car.
Right.
That's a no-no.
Right.
But you store the guitar in the house, you're 78 degrees, The humidity's probably about 59%, was probably perfect for a guitar.
Okay.
When the humidity level gets down like an Arizona area, which is about 30%, 20%, guess what happens? You dry out.
Oh.
So normally here in South Florida, I don't recommend any humidity humidifier for a guitar. You take the guitar, you need to keep it in the case. Okay.
As much as possible.
As much as possible. Hanging on the wall is okay.
Yeah.
As
you can
like
see,
it.
I have three guitars hanging from the wall here.
And we do. I like it, but I think I've had much better luck in the case. But guess what? After it gets a little cold and then I pull a guitar out of the case.
Yeah.
The tuning changes.
Yeah, yeah.
At church on Sunday, I had that same issue. It comes in. The guitar's really hot. I come in, and the guys are like, hey, tune your guitar.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay.
And I'm like, well, I'm just going to wait a little while. They're like, you're hurting my ears.
It's so
like,
consistent. As long as the conditions it's in sort of stay consistent.
If they're consistent. Now, a lot of musicians are not consistent because guess what? They're going to their gig. They're throwing it in their gig bag.
Yeah,
they're
yeah.
going to the ocean. And guess what? That guitar, it gets a toll taken on it.
Right.
But as much as you can, you wipe it down, you put it back in a case, and you keep it in a gig bag at home or keep it in a case, and you'll have less issues with it at that point.
And see, I didn't realize that having in too arid of a climate that it was just as bad for a guitar as having too much humidity. So somewhere right in the middle is the best place to be.
It's the middle, and South Florida happens to be a good spot to be in the middle to keep the guitar.
Excellent.
And personally, I put them back in a case.
Yeah.
And I leave them there. I play. I might leave it out for an hour. And I put it back in a case. But once, because you're talking wood, solid spruce.
Right.
Rosewood back in size, ebony fretboard, mahogany neck. It's wood.
Always good to have your hands nice and clean before you play a guitar so you don't get all that oil, skin
oil on
you.
All the oils have to be wiped off the neck and
right.
off the body or
right.
otherwise discolored. Now, this is a 10-year-old, a 9-year-old top. Look at the color.
On the Taylor. Right.
And the color has changed from a light spruce to a dark, rich color.
It has, huh?
And the wood has aged, and the sound starts to come out of it.
Yeah.
But if you don't ever wipe the guitar, you'll see where your arm...
Mm-hmm. You'll see where your forearm was up against the guitar.
On this guitar, you don't see that.
Ah.
And that's that, as a dealer and as a vintage dealer, as this guitar gets older... It's going to be worth more money.
Mm-hmm.
The top is aged. It's not worn.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't have that big sweat stain mark on it. And as you see, the rosewood in the back, and this is the main thing about keeping your guitar. Forget about the humidity.
Wow.
Buckle rash. Don't wear your belt buckle.
None of that is on there
Turn
at all.
Turn your belt buckle to the side. There's no buckle rash on a 10-year-old guitar. There's not a scratch
that's,
on it.
That's very good attention to detail there, my brother.
Except on the top. The top does get a couple of marks. But when you look to sell a guitar like this, or to purchase it, people look at that, even if it's a 30-year-old guitar.
Right, right.
Why is it scratched? Well, it's 30 years old.
Yeah.
But, you know, you may not get enough money for it at that point.
Exactly. Wow, that's just fascinating stuff. Now, I was under the impression that over the years, as guitars age, the sound gets more rich and better. Is this
absolutely true? That's why you see the coloration of the wood on this particular Taylor.
I see. All right. Well, this is all really good stuff. And again, we want to. If you want to find, I got the wrong thing going here. If you want to find Jeffrey online at gbass.com, you can punch up the Fort Lauderdale area in the search bar there, and kind of narrow down where he is and see what his inventory is all about, and pick up one of these great guitars. Look into more about the Tom Anderson Guitar Works, but I think it's just a work of art. It's a beautiful thing. Now, what was your? I let you play my Hamer that I have here that I picked up used probably about 7 or 8 years ago. That you know, it's one of those things. And again, I'm not a good enough player to tell, but the good guitar players that I've let play this guitar said it really plays nice and it's got a good feel. Where does Hamer fit in there in the rankings of brands of guitars?
Hamer has made a good guitar in the past, and at this point in time, you don't see them too much out there. But when you do see an older piece. Someone had the Brazilian board on it, which is a rosewood,
right?
The Brazilian, But the majority of the ones that I've seen were very good.
Yeah, yeah. And the few that I have seen with people on stage playing them have all, you know, I guess I'm a little biased, but they all sound like, seem like they sound really, really good as well, too. I'm trying to think of what else I need to ask you. Is it possible that I could hand over one of my acoustic guitars to you and have you put a nice pickup system in there? And
absolutely.
And active stuff in there? Because I think I need one of those for the studio work in here. I like the combination of tune of miking a guitar and also having it go through when you record. So that's something I need to do. So I guess I'm just asking you out in the open in front of everybody here if I can do that with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We can, you know, something that I like that has been coming in one of my Martins. I have the Gold Plus,
right,
which is a Martin pickup, very simple under the saddle. They're usually about to do the whole job like that. It's about a $200 job to get something nice in your guitar.
Well, that's what I want to do.
So yeah, those pieces actually come from Martin. So that's what they're putting in their HD28s and their Claflins and their John Mayers.
Okay.
There's other ones out there, LR Bags and Fishman, and each one has different types. In this particular Taylor, there's a Fishman system. It's a stereo prefix blender. It's an older one, but obviously the sound was good on it.
But that comes stock on that Taylor, right?
That was stock on Taylor, but they do sell systems like that. But the one that you want to put in most of these guitars are the under the saddle, goes through the strap button.
Right.
Type, so there's really not too much drilling and
it's not so invasive on the guitar body,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because a lot of people don't want to do that, but these guitars came like that from the factory, so they were already done, and you didn't have to worry about that.
Well, cool. I'll take my acoustic guitar setup here to the next level. Jeffrey D'Amico, Jeffrey D Guitars D'Amico, whatever it is. Any number of ways of finding him. We've got the link for his Facebook page posted here, so you can friend him and find out more about guitars. And, of course, you can find his inventory at gbass.com. Thanks so much for coming in person and doing this with me, my brother.
Thank you, man. It's an honor.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, man. And we have even a lot more to talk about with guitars, even after the show is done here. So all music all the time now on the Bill Murphy Show. Tune in again tomorrow for another interesting guest and hopefully a live performance that I'm trying to set up as we speak for this coming Friday right here. Thanks for tuning in again, everybody. And again, if you need to get in touch with me, contact me at Murph, that's MURPH, at BillMurphyShow.com.